Parshas Chukas begins, of course, with the Chukas HaTorah, Paraduma, and the Torah devotes a good number of psukim to the entire procedure. There's many details, many aspects. There is an entire Masechta of Mishnayos, Maseches Para, dealing with all of these matters. A very interesting halacha, which then became quite a great controversy, centers around Pasuk Tes, Perek Yotes, Pasuk Tes. The para has been burnt, and now there's the ashes. Pasuk Tes says, V'asaf ishtahor, eis efer ha-para, a pure, tahor, a tahor, a kohen. He should gather the ashes and then put them together with the water, and he's the one that sprinkles on the person who has tumas meis. What is the meaning of the word ish tahor? How tahor is tahor? How pure does he need to be? Well, how pure can he be? Well, on this matter, there erupted an enormous machlokas between the Pirushim and the Tzidokim. As we know, here and there, they had their disputes. In principle, the Tzidokim was to recognize Torah Shebaal Peh. The oral tradition, they prefer to go it alone with the Torah Shebichtav, which is, of course, unacceptable and not really Torah. And the Perushim have the benefit of the Torah Shebaal Peh, of the Masorah. When a person is Tomei and goes to the mikveh, there is a corridor of time between when he's gone to the mikveh and sunset of that day, which is called Tevul Yom, which is also a Masechta of Mishnayos. Tevul Yom. Tevul Yom means he's done Tevila, but it's still the day. Is he completely Tahor? No. Is he partially Tahor? Yes. What difference does it make? Well, it depends. The Halacha states, the Masorah is, that Tevul Yom, someone who has gone to the mikveh but hasn't yet had the sunset, which of course is the famous opening of the Shas, the beginning of Maseches Brachos, Uvo HaShemesh V'Taher, from the time the Kohanim Nichnosim Le'echob U'Trumoson, which is Seis HaKuchavim, of the day after they've gone to the mikveh. In any case, the halacha is that a Tevul Yom is kosher to be the Kohen. He's completely eligible to sprinkle onto the person who's Tamei Meis. He's Tahor enough. Whereas the Tzidokim said, no, if until Harav Shemesh, until the sun has set, he's not Tahor enough, this would be disqualified. And that's a machlokas. What does the word Tahor? They take the word Tahor at face value. He's got to be completely Tahor. Whereas the halacha is that it's enough for him to be that Tahor. He's gone to the mikveh even. So much so, it became one of the cause célèbres, so to speak, because Mishnah tells us that they used to make a point of being metame, the Kohen that was to sprinkle the water. Then he'll go to the mikveh and then have him do the whole thing that day before sunset. Bedafka. They made him tame. And to be sure that he would be in this category called Tevul Yom. In the words of the Gemara, Lahotzi milibam shel tzidokim. Completely oust from the opinion of the tzidokim, they took him to that state of Tevul Yom. They engineered it. And interesting to note, although it's not part of our discussion this evening, it's for this reason that Para Aduma actually ends up having many, many chumras. From a certain point of view, it's the most sensitive of all of the taharas. The reason why is that this was a second wave reaction, so that people shouldn't be mezalzel, people shouldn't stop taking paraduma seriously. It began with making him tamei, but lest the person say, oh, so he was tamei, so I guess that's tamei, and that's tamei. So that actually engendered all manner of protective measures to ensure the tahara of the paraduma. That's the fallout from this making him tamei. Lahotzi milibam shel tzidokim. Mefarshim wonder, one can only imagine, there must have been dozens, hundreds of machloksim between the Perushim and the Tzidokim. Whenever the written law and the oral law part ways, or whenever the oral law has what to add and the tzedukim don't accept it, there must be many, many times that they will have a machlokus, but we don't see that we force a confrontation over the matter. So in a sense, manishtana ha-machlokus hazeh, that here it becomes a confrontation, and you make him tomei, that they should know. What made this case or this halachic dispute so unusual? And this is a question which is addressed by the Pnei Yeshua in his Chidushim to Maseches Yuma. And the Pnei Yeshua says something very interesting. Normally, we can anticipate that the Torah Shebaal Peh, if it has the form of adding on to Torah Shebichtav, will give you more stringencies. The simple reading of the Pasuk means that should be sufficient, but then Torah Shebaal Peh says, no, you require more. Which means there's less of a worry for a person who's largely faithful to Torah. He wouldn't want to take a chance. He wouldn't want to go the course of leniency with tzedokim because he may be doing the wrong thing. The Paraduma case is unique, almost, in that actually the Torah Shebaal Peh is more lenient than the simple reading of the Pasuk. The way that tzedokim read it, he's got to be completely tahor. He has to have been to the mikvah, and it's got to, the sun has to set, and whereas the Torah Shebaal Peh says, no, it's sufficient for him just to go to the mikvah. There is a way here, says the Pnei Yeshua, that a person may, his conscience may be troubling him to be machmir, like the tzedokim, because it's the one case where the pirushim actually go the course of kula. And therefore, in order to disavow him of any such notion, to think that he's doing anything more correct by following a course of stringency with the tzedokim, that's why they made such a big deal out of this machlokus. They made a point in Tamei Lehotzi Milibam Shel Tzedokim. So that's a very interesting explanation of the Pnei Yeshua. Of all the machlokus in between the tzedokim and the prushim, this is one for the books. The tzedokim are the machmirim. Perhaps one may suggest a somewhat different answer, different approach. There are a number of machloksim that became very famous between the tzedokim and the pirushim. Amongst them was the issue of Kiddush HaChodesh. Kiddush HaChodesh was somehow the bane of the existence of the tzedokim. They couldn't handle it. In fact, so much so, that they used to disrupt the original system of letting people know what the Rosh Chodesh was. The Mishnah tells us in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, originally, it went very quick. The message spread, not like wildfire, but through fire. They used to lit bonfires on the mountain, Lechumevi, Malo, Morid, and then his friends saw it, and Mitzvah, Gereres Mitzvah, and before you look around, everybody knows. They could get the message to Chutz Laaretz by the end of the evening. The Tzedokim started interfering. They started lighting fires on the wrong day. Even if it wasn't Rosh Chodesh, they would light the fires, and therefore no one could ever really rely on the fires anymore, because you never knew if it was a kosher fire or a tzedoki fire. So they had to completely abolish that form, and therefore inform people personally, which is a tremendous irony, because the tzedokim had issues with the rabbis. They are the cause of Yom Tov Sheni. In Chutz La'aretz, they helped create a Rabbanon Yom Tov. It's only because no one knows when Rosh Chodesh was that people in Chutz La'aretz generally didn't know by the time Pesach came, by the time Sukkot came, when was the Chodesh? They kept 2 days out of doubt. That's only because of the Tzedokim. So for the trouble, the Tzedokim are contributors, but they are not Zechur L'Tov for Yom Tov Sheni. That's the way it goes sometimes. But in any case, once again, it's such a concerted effort over a very specific type of halacha. And yet I believe that these machloksim are characteristic, really, of the entire machlokas between the tzedokim and the pirushim. Essentially, in rejecting Torah Shebaal Peh, the tzedokim are making a certain statement about the nature of religion. For them, at a certain level, it was inconceivable that there could be such a thing as Torah Shebaal Peh. Because Torah Shebaal Peh allows for the contribution and for the initiative and partnership to a certain degree of the Sanhedrin, of people, into Torah, into the religion. They can pass on the halacha, the famous lo b'shamayim hi. And that's a question of approach. I mean, that's a vision of what a religious person is. For the tzedokim, religion is purely passive. It's entirely receptive. What is a person's role in religion? To do what the Torah tells him to do. There's nothing more to say. Ironically, for the Purushim, there's plenty more to say. You begin with the Torah, Bishloshes Armidas, HaTorah Nedreshes Bahem, and the rabbis have been busy ever since. In a sense, the tip of the spear here is the issue of Kiddush HaChodesh, because it's very pronounced. Kiddush HaChodesh says, whatever day Beis Din pronounced as Rosh Chodesh is Rosh Chodesh. If they say it's day 30, it's day 30. If it's 31, it's 31. Even though, of course, they're basing themselves on sightings of the moon, it's not arbitrary, but nonetheless, the fact remains, whatever day they say is Rosh Chodesh, Rosh Chodesh. This was such a thorn in the side for the tzedokim, because that's antithetical to their view of what religion is. You see, when the moon is, that's when Rosh Chodesh is. You can't say when Rosh Chodesh is. If it's one day, you can't say it's a different day. But we say, Achodesh Hazalachem, Rosh Chodesh is you. And that's the first mitzvah given to the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, because it's emblematic of all mitzvahs to it. None perhaps as pronounced as Kiddush Achodesh, but they all have an aspect of Kiddush HaChodesh to them, that the Sanhedrin can make its mark. And for the tzedokim, that was completely unacceptable on religious grounds. One always has to be careful of, beware of people of principle. They had religious issues with the Sanhedrin. And I believe that the same is true, perhaps, for the issue of Parah Adumah. There are two stages in the Tahara process. One is to go to the mikveh, and the other is Harav Shemesh, when the sun sets. Now, these are not just stage one and stage two. They're actually qualitatively different. The stage one of the mikveh is something that the person does. It's his action. Stage two, there's nothing you can do about it, since he's entirely passive. Just the sun sets and that's that. And now the question is, the burning question is, can you call a person tahor? Can a person have changed his state based only on his actions? And here again we see the differences of approach between the tzedokim and the purushim. For the tzedokim, he can't be tahor until life makes him tahor, until the sun makes him tahor, until something happens to him. But just the fact that he did something, that can't fundamentally alter his state and make him tahor. Whereas the Purush said, no, he's gone to the mikveh, he's done something, his action alone renders him tahor enough for purposes of Parah Adumah. So I believe that's why there was so much, again, commotion surrounding this machlokas. It's all about this question at the end of the day. And interestingly, the Parah Adumah is very closely associated with Torah Shebaal Peh. The Midrashim connect them a lot, and therefore, specifically in the area of Parah Adumah, that's when you see that if a person's made himself Tameh, he's taken the steps to make himself Tahor, he's considered Tahor enough as far as the Parah Adumah is concerned. Now, with regards to the Chok of Parah Adumah, well, it's called Chok HaSatorah, it's the quintessential Chok, the Chok of the Torah, not even called Chok HaSaparah. And we don't know. We don't know what it's all about. And that's just how it is. It's that one mitzvah that no one really knows what it's about. There is a medrash regarding the Parah Adumah which says that in the future, the reason for Parah Adumah will be known. The Medrash says, Devarim, commenting on Zoschul Kasatorah, Devarim hamechusim mikem ba'olam hazeh, things that are covered, concealed from you in this world, asidim liyos tsofim la'olam haba. That in the future, in the world to come, they will be all revealed. Ka'adein samya detzafi, like a samya, like a summa, like a blind person who's then able to see. It quotes a pasuk in Yeshaya, Perek Membeis, V'holachti Ivrim, Ivrim with a Vav, Iver, I will cause the blind to go b'derech lo yadu in a way that they never knew before, they never saw before. Their eyes will be opened. In a sense, difficult to know how to relate to this medrash. Does it make it better or worse? Be'er Yosef claims that it makes it worse, in the sense that it was easier for us to understand or to accept that there's just certain things that we just can't understand. That's life. But then the Medrash says, but in the future we will understand. So then ultimately it is accessible. So why can't we understand it now? Why do we have to wait if we may ask a Balabhatrisha question? Further, with regards to the Para Aduma, Rashi quotes the famous Nusach of Chazal, the nations of the world and the Satan, they're always deriding the Chukim, they don't make any sense, and I'm not sure that's so much of an issue. I don't know if that's our primary issue anymore. But at the time, certainly it was, and maybe within a person, he has, when it comes to Chukim, so he's wondering what's it all about. And the answer, at least for the time being, Rashi quotes, Chukah Chakakti, Gezeira Gazarti. This is the chok, this is the decree, Ein Lecha Rishus Lahar Achareha. You're not able to try and fathom it, to try and understand it. Chukah Chakakti, Gezeira Gazarti. And Yosef, again, Rabbi Yosef Salant, asked a very simple shaila. Are these the same thing? Chukah Chakakti. What is a chok? It's a what we would call a gezeira zakosov. It's a mitzvah that you don't know. So it's the same as a gezeira. I mean, the chok is the decree. So chukah chakakti, I've made this chok, is the same as saying gezeira gazarti. I mean, it's the same thing. They're not two things. So what's the double expression here? Now, with regards to this chok, we keep on calling it that, and the Torah calls it that. We are mindful of the fact, Rashi quotes from Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan, that we do get a bit of an insight into the Para Aduma. Rashi gives the famous mashal of the child, right? The mother brought the child into the king's palace, the child made a mess. They say, let the mother come and clean up the mess. Tavoha eim tikaneh toas haben. Now that sounds a lot like and the nimshal there is that the Para Aduma is the kapara for the cheta egel. The eagle is the calf, it's the young of the cow. Let the mother come, para aduman. But why is this not illegal to begin to expound on what the para aduma is all about, if it's meant to be a chok? For many mefarshim, when we say that the para aduma is a chok, we're not talking about every aspect of the para aduma. It's actually referring specifically to one part of the Para Aduma, which not only is mysterious and unfathomable, it's actually paradoxical. And that is, as we know, that the Kohen, who's Tahor, and he became Tahor, whatever that is, Tevil Yom, made to enter the mikveh, as soon as he sprinkles the water onto the para, onto the person that's Tomei, the one who's Tomei becomes Tahor, and the one who sprinkled the water now is Tomei. In the words of Chazal, "Mitaher is hatameim, umetami is hatahorim." Someone who is tamei becomes tahor, and vice versa. How can the one thing have those two opposite effects? One could posit a kal vachomer here. If it has the power to be mitaher, someone who's already tamei, so certainly someone who begins tahor should remain so. How can it just work in these two conflicting directions? And the Gemara Maseches Nida and Daftes explicitly mentions this as the sticky point within Para Aduma, the impossible point. It quotes the pasuk in Koheles. Koheles says, "Amarti ech kama, I thought that I would be wise, for he rechoka mimeni, but it's beyond me." Says the Gemara, it was about this. What Shlomo HaMelech would try to understand, couldn't understand, was this point. It makes the Tomei Tahor, and makes the Tahor Tomei. So this is the point that remains. Perhaps there are other aspects of Para Aduma, really, if that's true. If this is the point that's beyond Shlomo HaMelech, us, by extension, then maybe other points can be explained. This is really the chok. But why should this remain the chok, if we may ask? And the Be'er Yosef says something I believe it's very profound. We've mentioned on many occasions, the Zohar Kodesh says it, and the Medrash also in its way, that life and the world is very much connected to the nature of Torah. The Zohar says, the famous quotation, Istakel Ba'araisa, Hashem looked into the Torah, Ubara Alma, created the world. That means that the running of the world is very much a product of and parallel to the way the Torah is. Specifically for Bnei Yisrael, specifically the experiences of the Jewish people are very much connected with the experiences of Torah, if one may say. That's what the Maharal says in the Sefer Gevuras Hashem. That the Gemara says there will become a time when Torah will be, you will be difficult to find organized halacha. That's what the Gemara says. You won't find Mishnah brura v'halacha brura b'makom echad. The halachas will be disorganized, all over the place. Says Maharal, that's referring to a time when the Jewish people are all over the place. The destiny of the Torah and the destiny of the Jewish people go hand in hand. When the Jewish people go into Golus, the Torah goes into Golus, so to speak. If the Jewish people are dispersed, and there's Jews everywhere, and they're all over the place, so then there's Torah everywhere, and it's all over the place. And it's not organized, and it's not concentrated, and it's not... I think we may say that a great deal of Torah literature nowadays is about collecting Torah. And it's about organizing Torah. And in a sense, there's less chidushim, but a great deal of the Torah scholarship and Torah input is about bringing things back in an organized way, in a cohesive way. And in a sense, we may say that reflects the Jewish people also coming back. So you have almost like a kibbutz golios of Torah. Everything is now organized. There's no excuse for saying I didn't know where to find it. I mean, everything has an index, and everything has a table of contents, and the index has an index, and then you can't lose. You can't fail. You just have to open the book. Well, what that means is that life in Golus, and we're still in Golus, and it has to be said even here, we're in Golus. There can be Golus in Eretz Yisrael. That's the story of Hanukkah. Attests to. So not everything always works out the way that we would like to, or even perceive as being fair and just. So how is it possible to relate to these experiences? From where do we get the strength, really? Or even the forbearance? Says Be'er Yosef, that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu has set aside a mitzvah, and that mitzvah is a chuk. That means there's an area of Torah that's part of our national experience, and it doesn't make any sense to us. And it goes all over the place. And it's the opposite of what you think. Because chukim, I mean, spearheaded by Parah Aduma, but by extension all chukim, they are what give the Jewish people the ability to relate to life the way that they relate to Torah. The pasuk says in Tehillim, Kuf Yotet, it's a pasuk we quoted a few weeks ago in a different context, Zemiros hayolichukecha, David HaMelech says, Zemiros hayolichukecha, bebeis megurai. Your chukim were songs, they were music to me. Bebeis megurai, in the house of my fear, megurai, from the word magor. It's a reference to when David was on the run, and he was a number of times. When David was running for his life, things did not look as they should to him. He was only trying to do the right thing, and wherever he looks, people are trying to kill him. So where did he get his fortification from? He got it from the chukim. Zemiros ha'ili chukecha, it was the chukim that kept him going. Because being able to establish that relationship with that part of Torah allowed him to establish a relationship with that part of life. So Bebeis Megurai, the music for him that kept him going with the chukim. And therefore, if we may come back, and I believe it's a very profound discussion here in the Be'er Yosef, if we come back to the way the Chazal described the Paraduma, Chukka Chokakti, Gezeira Gazarti, I've given you the Chukka, and I've made decrees. Says Be'er Yosef, those aren't two ways of saying the same thing. They are two different things, but they're related. Chukka Chokakti is the Chokin, and Gezeira Gazarti, they're all the decrees of life, things that don't check out, don't make sense to us. Seem counterintuitive. Chukka Chokakti, Hashem provides Chukim for us in order to get us through Gezeira Gazarti. And we find that this is an idea which is echoed in later generations. There's an interesting minhag. It's quoted by of the Rishonim, the Shibali HaLeket. And it relates to an interesting day in the year. It's not a calendar date. It's the Friday of Parshas Chukas. So it can fall in principle whenever. But the Friday of Parshas Chukas, says the Shibali HaLeket, Yechidim Mis'anim. Some Yechidim, some pious individuals, they take it upon themselves as a fast day. What happened there? So Shibali HaLeket, in 1242, I believe it was, that's when all of the Torah writings in France were burnt. Those 24 wagon loads. It was impossible, and that was almost the end of Torah in France. They had to begin almost from nothing. And in those days, I mean nowadays, it's everything's backed up everywhere. It's impossible for us to relate to what it means. Aside from the bizayon and the trauma, which some would like to bring back, of burning Torah works, just everything that went into them literally goes up in ashes and it can't be replaced. And no one knew what to make of it. And they made a She'elas Shalom. They inquired through whoever was able to do that. And the answer that came back was three words, which are actually taken from Unkelus and the opening of Parshas Chukas. Chukas begins Zos Chukas HaTorah. Unkelus translates Dein Gezeiras Araisa. This is the decree of the Torah. The three words that came back as in explanation or in response to the She'elas Shalom, Ma'zeh Ve'al Ma'zeh, what's it all about? Dein Gezeiras Araisa. This is it. This is that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu has decided that there's no way you can understand it. And that day was Friday of Parshas Chukas. It was the day before Zos Chukas HaTorah. And therefore that day became now fixed. And tragically interestingly, for some reason, the Friday of Parshas Chukas, it kind of resonated later in history and to other places. In the Chmielewski massacres in 1648, Tach V'Tat, the Shach, who lived through and went through it, he recorded and wrote kinnis about it, and there were two kehillah that were both destroyed on one day, and the Shach said it was the Friday of Parshas Chukas. In a completely different setting, there is a sefer called Mo'ed L'chol Chai, written by one of the Sfardi Gedolim, Rabbi Chaim Palagi, who lived in Izmir, in Turkey. And he notes a minhag there, that on an annual basis, the Friday before Parshas Chukas, people didn't go to work. The Jewish community just stayed home. It was just a day off. Apparently they'd had such bad experiences or had a sense of such a foreboding that they just kind of stayed at home. That's Gezeiras Araisa. And in a sense, says the Be'er Yosef, this remains a chok. Metaris hatamei and metamis hatahorim. A person that's tamei ends up doing better. A person who's tahor ends up doing worse. And until further notice, it's a chok. It's a chok in order to get the Jewish people, allow them to continue through the times when life seems to be mitaris atameim and mitamis atahurim. And that's why the Medrash says that the characteristics of the paraduma, aduma, tamima, The Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah attaches each one, associates each one of those words with one of the Arba Golios. The original Parah is Mitzrayim, and then it goes through them all. Aduma is Babel, Tamima is Madai, Ein Bamum is Yavan, Lo Ala Lehol is Edom. In other words, all of the Golos experiences where things don't really go the way we think they should be going are all really encapsulated within the Parah Aduma. And that's how things stand. But the Gemara tells us in Maseches Psachim, in Daf Nun Amud Aleph, that part of the of what we're looking forward to in the future, as unbelievable as it seems now, as impossible as it seems now, is to understand how, why exactly everything happened the way that it did, and how things that were impossible for us to understand how this could happen or would happen, why it is. In a sense, therefore, La'asid Lavo, we won't need the Chok of Paraduma. We won't need any of the Torah to remain a mystery. Because we won't need to be born through times where things don't work out the way they should. Because we'll understand exactly why everything is the way that it is. For us, that sounds like a far way away. And that, says the Be'er Yosef, is why the Medrash says that in the future, the reason for Paraduma will be known. We ask the question, well, if it will be known, why can't it be known now? We can't have it known to us now because it needs to help us with all the other things that are unknown to us now. It needs to remain a chok for all of the gezeros. But once all of that becomes clear, the Paraduma itself is free to become clear. And that's the pasuk in Yeshaya, that the blind, their eyes will be opened. That's something that we're looking forward to. So I believe it's a most meaningful and profound insight into, essentially, to the chok of Paraduma. Let's perhaps spend the remainder of our time discussing what, for in many respects, is the central to Parshas Chukas, which is the Mei Meriva, the famous hitting of the rock. Well, it's difficult to translate it into English without already taking a side as to what exactly happened. All we know is that something went wrong. The pasuk doesn't say explicitly what it is that went wrong. My most recent count was around about 32 or 33 explanations as to what it was that went wrong. So to translate the Mei Meriva as the hitting of the rock, you've already given a commentary in the translation because you say, well, that's what it was, Moshe hit the rock. But that is actually the explanation of Rashi, that he was told to speak to the rock, v'dibartem el ha'sela, all of this is the beginning of Perek Kaf. V'dibartem el ha'sela, and then he hit the rock. Mefarshim, many Mefarshim, ask some very simple questions. It sounds like the last thing that Moshe should do, wants to do, is to hit the rock. If he does, that will be a disaster. Let's have a look at Pasuk Ches. The people have complained. There's no water. Miriam died. There's no water. The Be'er had dried up temporarily. They came to Moshe. Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Limor, Pasuk Ches of Perek Kaf, Kach es hamate, take the staff. Va'akele so'eida atov aron achicha, v'dibartem el ha'sela, and speak to the sela. So that sounds like, of all the things to do before Moshe speaks to the people, the first thing Hashem tells him to do is take the staff, even though that's the thing that he should be most wanting to leave behind. Because if he takes the staff, what's he taking the staff for? I mean, presumably it's at least prone now to hit the rock. If that's the no good, so why would Hashem tell him to take the staff? China. Secondly, to understand what difference does it make if Moshe hits the rock or speaks to the rock, I mean, they're both, and if there is a difference, and for some reason one of them is okay and one is not okay, even if we leave it closed and we don't explain why it's not okay, but we know that it's okay. We know that it's not a negative thing, because this is actually not the first time that Moshe has taken water out of a rock. It's the famous one because Moshe came to grief over it. But actually, when we first came out of Mitzrayim, in Shvi of Parshas Beshalach, he had a similar thing. I mean, that's Rafidim, Masa Meriva. And what happened there? There was no water. Hashem said to Moshe, take the matah and hit the rock, and water will come out. So apparently, that's okay. But here, it was the cause of Moshe's troubles. How can it be okay in one setting and the worst case scenario in another? Now, before Moshe extracts the water from the rock, in Pasuk Yud, Vayakilu Moshe ve'Aaron es hakahal, al pnei asar, he gathers everyone together, Vayom alehem, and he says to them, Shimon ha'morim, ha'min ha'sela hazeh, notzi lechem mayim, from this rock will we bring forth water. And then he does so. And the next pasuk. But what exactly is the role of this question? That no one answers it. Is it a rhetorical question? I mean, if they're meant to answer it, I think the answer is yes, because they're all thirsty. So is he offering to bring forth water? It's kind of doesn't seem to be serving any purpose. He proceeds to do what he would have done anyway, what he's been told to do, is to take water from the rock. But somehow you have this question lingering there. I mean, hasela hazen utzilach emayim, which is, what was Moshe expecting? And what did he do now that no one answered it? He did it anyway. And these are questions that are raised in different ways by many Mefarshim. And we will take this year the approach to this section of Parshas Chukas from the Sefer Ponim Yafos. The Ponim Yafos is written by the Hafla, who is Rav Pinchas Halevi Horowitz, one of the two Rebbeim of the Chasam Sofer in Frankfurt. He was the Rav in Frankfurt, Pinchas Halevi Horowitz. He's famous as the author of the Hafla and Maseches Ksubas. That's why he's called the Hafla. And his Sefer on the Chumash is called Ponim Yafos. I just actually, yesterday, in a completely different context, I never thought about it or realized, he's called the Hafla because it's Rosh HaTevis, Hakotan Pinchas Levi Ish Horowitz. That's law. Anyway. So, he explains as follows. We mentioned that there's more than one approach or explanation as to what it was that Moshe did wrong on his level here. Some say that it's because he hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock. Rashi says that, as we've seen. Others say, it's a famous Rambam in the Shmona Prakim, is that he became angry. And that's represented by his opening words to the people, Shimon ha'morim, which is slightly harsh. Shimon ha'morim, whatever morim are, rebels. Says the Ponim Yafos, it appears to me that the way forward here is a composite understanding. That both of these played a role. His anger, on whatever level he became angry, and here we always insert, because it's important to remember, if it's true that Moshe expressed some anger or impatience against the Bnei Yisrael, don't forget, I believe it's Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky who points out, don't forget, this is Moshe on the day that his sister Miriam passed away, in whose merit the entire Jewish people had been drinking water for the last 40 years, and the only thing that's recorded in the Torah for us, as what is their response? No water. That's not proper. There's no condolences, there's no patience, there's no understanding. All Moshe gets is a complaint. It's impossible for us to fathom to what degree these things affect Moshe. It's wrong to make assumptions in this regard. But this is pointed out by Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. So Moshe says, Shimon ha'morim. Now, I mean, that's the subtotal of his anger. He calls them morim. And the Hafla explains as follows. Ideally, the way to extract water from the rock is by speaking to it. However, because it's such a high-level miracle, Moshe's actions can never be fundamentally divorced from the spiritual level of the Jewish people. When the Jewish people are at their best, Moshe is at his best. When they fall, Moshe at the very least gets demoted. The famous Rashi, from the Gemara Brachos, Daf Lamed Beis, the time of the Egel, Hashem says to Moshe, Lech Reid, go down. And it said twice, go down the mountain, and Rashi says, Reid Migduloscha, they've fallen, so then you fall. Rashi tells us elsewhere in Chumash Devarim that when the Jewish people were, in a sense, being censured during the time that they were in the Midbar as a result of the Meraglim, so Hashem didn't speak to Moshe in the same way that he did before and afterwards. And therefore, the ideal way, no question about it, to bring forth water is by speaking to the rock. But that also requires that the Jewish people will be on a level that will allow Moshe to extract the water in that way. But that cannot be taken for granted, because the level of the Jewish people is something that can fluctuate, and HaKol B'Yedei Shamayim, Chutz Miyirat Shamayim, they are free to choose whatever path they do. They can rise to the occasion, or they can fail to rise to the occasion. They're going to still need water, but if they don't approach the situation at their best, so Moshe can't approach the situation in the best way. The lower madrega is the more physical act. Again, for us, these differences are infinitesimal. But the difference between the speaking to the rock or hitting the rock, more spiritual, more physical, it's reflective of the level of the Jewish people. That's why the first time, 40 years ago, in Parshas B'Shalach, when the Jewish people needed water, it wasn't even an option to speak to the rock. They're just developing, they're just beginning. And Hashem just tells Moshe straight away, take your staff and hit the rock. There's no point in going for more. It's not an option. It's not on the horizon at this stage. And it was perfectly acceptable. 40 years later, with everything that's happened, it becomes a possibility. But let's say the Jewish people do not rise to the occasion. So they're going to go thirsty for... No? Then plan B will be to hit the rock. So really what's happening, and this is based on the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, who presents the taking of the staff and the speaking to the rock as lechatchila and bidiyevet, the ideal and the de facto, should it prove to be necessary. Well, with this in mind, we get a new insight into Moshe's introductory words. He speaks to the Jewish people before he acts. Why is he speaking to them? He wants to gauge. Where are they? What level are they? Are they with him? Are they trusting in him as Hashem's agent? Are they distrustful? Are they antagonistic? And therefore, he says, Hamin hasela hazeh nutzilechem mayim. He was looking for a response. Shall we bring forth water? Ideally, Bnei Yisrael should respond, yes, absolutely, that's what we're here for. We know you can do it. Hashem has entrusted you to do this. No one said anything. Because no one said anything, Moshe took that as a sign of mistrust, as a sign of reticence on the part of the Jewish people. They didn't say yes, because maybe they're thinking no. And if that's true, then the Jewish people are not at their best. And Moshe felt it was not appropriate under these circumstances, as he gauged them, to go for the higher level of speaking to the rock. The Jewish people are not at a level that can make that happen. And that's why he hit the rock, which is plan B. So now the chin is, so then what? Where was the mistake? If it's true, he asked them a question, nobody answered. So why was he wrong in drawing the conclusion that they could not enable or finance the higher level of speaking to the rock? The answer is in the first words. Shimun HaMorim. Shimun HaMorim, which is Moshe's words of rebuke to a degree of Bnei Yisrael. For Moshe, they were meant to have the effect of in a sense, aligning the Jewish people, just making them get themselves together a little bit. But Chazal say that Moshe, to whatever degree he did this, said these words in anger. So to say Shimun HaMorim in an angry way had the effect of intimidating, really, Bnei Yisrael. They felt that maybe they're not meant to say anything now. Or they were a little bit taken aback. So if that's true, then when Moshe asked the question and he was expecting an answer, but the Jewish people were no longer in a frame of mind or that they could give an answer because they weren't sure if they meant to say anything now. They didn't feel that they should say something. But that was a result of the fact that Moshe got angry at them. So they were cowering a little bit. So when they didn't say anything, so Moshe took that as a sign of mistrust, but really it was a sign of just that they were taken aback by Moshe being angry at them. It turns out, therefore, says the Hafla, that what are identified as two separate causes for the problem are actually twin causes. One is a tributary of the other. In other words, some say it's because Moshe got angry. It's not the only time Moshe gets angry at the Bnei Yisrael. And the Pasuk doesn't say that he got angry. So if that's it, this is not the most explicit the Torah has been about Moshe being angry. Elsewhere it says, Vayichal Moshe. It doesn't say that here. So it doesn't sound like this was the angriest that Moshe has been, in whatever way that can be quantified. But nonetheless, that wasn't the sin, the mistake, but it set up the mistake. Because as a result of Moshe being angry, Bnei Yisrael didn't respond, and he took that as a sign that he should not be speaking to the rock, but hitting the rock. But the truth is, had he spoken to the rock, water would have come out. The Jewish people were fundamentally on level. And says the Hafla, in a sense, it sounds like we've taken Rashi, that it's about hitting the rock, and others, that it's about saying the wrong thing to the Jewish people, and we're kind of putting two different opinions together. But actually, there's more to it than that. For Rashi himself comments on Moshe's error three times. Once in his parish on the Chumash, once in his parish on the Gemara, and once in his parish on Tehillim. Now in the Chumash, which is in our parsha, Rashi says very plainly, he hit the rock, he should have spoken to the rock, and that's that. In Masechet Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Aleph Amud Beis, there, the Gemara is talking, it's a well-known Gemara, where the advisors of Paro told him to throw the Jewish males into the river, because they knew that Moshe's undoing at the end would come through water. Whoever, Moshe and Shal Yisrael, would come through water. And the Gemara says that they didn't realize that really his undoing would come through water in a very different setting much later on, namely Mei Meriva. Rashi, commenting on the words Mei Meriva, that Moshe kind of came undone then, Rashi says that he said to Bnei Yisrael, Shimu no HaMorim. Now that's very different than what we heard Chumash. Chumash, he says, it's because he hit the rock, should have spoken to it. Here he sounds more like the Rambam. That is, he said, Shimu no HaMorim. Furthermore, in Tehillim, in Perek Tzadik Tet, which we say in Kabbalah Shabbos, actually, those final, the late 90s in the Kabbalah Shabbos. So it says, and it's damn interesting to get an insight into the taich even of the words here. Moshe ve'aron b'cho'anav, u'shmuel b'kor shemo, korim l'Hashem v'u'yani. So it begins with Moshe, Aaron, and then Shmuel, and then. And here, there's so many pronouns, you need parshanut here. Hashem Elokeinu, Ata Anisam. You answered them. Kel Nosi Hayisal Lahem. You were forbearing God for them. Venokeim Aleilosam. But you exacted retribution for their misdeeds. Now who are they? There's a lot of thems here. And Rashi says that Kel Nosi Hayisal Lahem. You bore the sins of Bnei Yisrael, Lahem, for the benefit or for the sake of Moshe and Aaron. It's them. They are the them. Kel Nosi Salem. You bore the sins of Bnei Yisrael for Moshe and Aaron, and then Shmuel later on. But no came alililosam. But you also acted vengefully, exacted retribution alililosam on their misdeeds. Whose misdeeds? Moshe, Aaron, Ushmuel. But what do they do wrong? Says Rashi, Moshe v'Aaron, Shimu no ha-morim. That's the alilosam of Moshe. Aaron somehow gets involved here, which is a stammer question. It seems like Moshe's the only one talking, but Aaron also gets punished. Alilosam, complicit, silent partner, whatever it may be. And Shmuel, because of the way that he failed to raise his children the way he should have, that's a judgment of Chazal quoted in Rashi. Back to Moshe and Aaron, no came alililosam. Rashi here once again has told us that the wrongdoing, the mistake of the Mimariva, Shimon HaMorim. And this question is raised by the Marsha in Maseches Sota in Daf Yud Beis. It seems to be a contradiction in Rashi. And the Chumash Rashi will tell us that the mistake was they hit the rock, should have spoken to it. Elsewhere in the Gemara Sanhedrin and later on in his Perish on Tehillim, Rashi says Shimon HaMorim, which sounds like he spoke incorrectly or through anger, whatever it is, to Rashi doesn't say that he got angry. Shimon HaMorim may be a wrong nusach, perhaps, even though again we've heard sharper formulae coming from Moshe towards the Bnei Yisrael. However, says the Haflah, based on our understanding, the Elu Ve'elu, I mean, it's a really two harmonizing aspects within the issue here. There was the problem of Shimon HaMorim, which then begat the problem of hitting as opposed to speaking. So these are the comments of the Haflah. Plenty more to reflect upon in the Meimor Riva. The Chidor, if I'm not mistaken, says that they are Hema Meimoriva Asher Ravu Ba Mefarshim. They are the waters of contention. Mefarshim have been debating and discussing with each other ever since exactly what it was that went wrong. And in any case, this is some of the insights into the Parsha, beginning with the Paraduma Chukas HaTorah, and the Meimoriva itself was a form of a chok. I mean, the unfathomable happened, and Moshe somehow departed from what he was meant to do. Also, the counter to what anyone would have expected, also part of Chukas HaTorah, and perhaps also something to look forward to getting full vision on La'asid Lavo, Shekam Ben Mehir.